This is Josie Cotton, and you're listening to the Rock Solid Podcast.
Make me a deal and make it good for me. I won't get full of myself, I can't afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me today in the Zoom room, you know her best from the song Johnny, Are You Queer? She's an amazing singer, she's an amazing songwriter, and finally, her music is going to be available to the public once again. Please welcome Josie Cotton. Good morning, Josie.
Hey, Pat.
How are you?
Well, you first.
Well, I'm good. Are you in Los Angeles? Because that's where I am. I'm in Los Angeles.
I'm in Los Angeles.
Excellent. Yeah. And how are you doing with the lockdown?
Well, I go in and out of sanity.
Right.
Several times a day. I think I'm sane and then I'm not. And I'm breathing. I think that's a very good sign.
Right.
All in all. The bar has become really low.
Are you alone? Are you isolating with someone?
If you think of pets as someone's,
sure.
I have three cats and a dog, and that's my little family. And I do have really close friends who are my chosen family. So
Right. That's
about it. Yeah.
All right.
Solo mio. Yeah.
Well, look, as long as you have, that support system and you still got to take care of those pets, they're depending on you. So,
yeah. So
that's good. If you didn't have them, it might get a little dicey, but I'm glad you have those, cause they don't know what's going on.
They really don't have any idea.
They have no clue.
Much like me. we share that.
So Josie, I wanted to talk to you because, finally your music is becoming available again. For a long time, it was hard to get Josie Cotton CDs and downloads and all this good stuff. So why is it finally happening?
Well, what happened was I kept putting out records and putting them out myself. So they would end up in odd corners of the world. And when I realized from a publishing company that they were going to, they're strange people were involved in it and people I didn't know were getting paid and I wasn't. And it was a time to put everything onto one label and take it all off the internet slowly. We've been doing that, my label Kitten Robot and all of this one amazing team I have. And so slowly you have to take it out so that you can just start fresh.
Right.
And reboot it all. So we've been doing that and it's been really fun. It's what a great thing to be able to do during this pandemic because a lot of people never heard these records.
Right.
And so people, on social media who were fans from, thousands of years ago, kind of reintroducing them to the things I was doing when no one could find me.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the good thing is during this pandemic, you had the time to focus on doing this. I mean, a normal year, you might be touring or maybe recording or whatever other projects you have. But now that you're hunkered down, you can really focus on this. And you mentioned it. The label is Kitten Robot Records.
Yes. Yes.
And that's you.
It's me and it's I have some various partners. Paul Rossler from the Screamers is my partner in it, and Bruce Duff, who was at XXX for years and years, and just some really great individuals. It's a whole networking team of wonderful, talented people. I mean, I think it's the best group I've ever had around me.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, well, yeah. It makes all the difference. You know that they have your back and that they're good at their jobs and that they are, once again, the sanity comes into, they're sane. It's amazing with no major psychological problems, I would say.
Right.
So, but just enough to be interesting. I'd also say that.
And probably number one is they care about the music. They're not just in it for the money. You want to surround yourself with people that are in the Josie Cotton game. They love you and they love your music. And those are the people you want to work with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, God, that's the truth. Nothing worse than to be on a label and they don't get you and they don't like you and they want you to go away or, you know, that's not a great, cause artists want to be heard and they want to be loved and it's kind of a sad joke.
Sure.
Need, but it really does help when people aren't faking it in your presence. And at first it was all Josie Cotton all the time, which is a little embarrassing because I was the only one on the label. And but we begun signing other artists, and that's been wonderful.
That's cool.
So that's lovely, and we get to do it based on talent and then bringing something to the table. It's not like we're finding raggedy folk singers in the alley or something. It's like these are people who really have gotten a certain extent. They have their whole brand, for lack of a better word, and all of the the skills that go along with that and in varying degrees. So that's lovely too, to be able to help other people.
You know, when your first album came out, you were 26 years old. So with age and maturity comes wisdom. Like back then you might not have even realized if the label was just giving you lip service, because you were probably just so excited to have a record deal at that time.
Well, by the time I had a record out, I had already had three different label deals, so it was not like brand new,
gotcha,
fluffy, morning, it was wonderful. I had already been through the ringer by the time my first album came out, and so I wasn't under any illusion of what it was going to be.
So 1982, Convertible Music, which now you can get. It's back.
Well, what's so funny is that record, they went out of print a lot in the 80s.
Yeah.
1986, they stopped making it and they never put it on CD, which was so insane to me. Like, how am I supposed to pay you back all the money you say I owe if you never put it out on CD?
Right.
We don't make records anymore. And so that was a mystery. But now I got the rights back to those records from Elektra, which is what all artists from the 80s have the right to do.
Yeah.
And it was an accident I found out. It's not like they're notifying you of your right. There's a time limit, a window, and I was able to, crawl through the window. And it's an amazing feeling to have the rights to your original material. It's just incredible.
So do you own the masters, or how's this work? You do own the masters. And what's the process for people who aren't in the record business and aren't in the know? Yeah. What is the process for taking, getting your music back after this much time?
Well, essentially it's just, some paperwork, in the mail on your computer. It was a situation where they had either lost or destroyed or somehow misplaced my masters. So they didn't exist. But what I got the rights to was the rights to make it into another product.
Okay.
It's all digital domain, and then I can make, which I did. I made, remastered in the original albums, both of them, and then we put it on CD because it was never done, and all of that, and people just really seem so excited, and it was kind of great.
It is fun. It's fun when these albums that you remember from your youth come back around and you're able to get them, because, you know, for so many years you talk about these records and people are like, I don't know who that is. I don't know what you're talking about. And that's not cool. So I'm glad that we have the records again.
Thank you.
So let's talk about the first record. Again, you said released on Elektra Records. Now, when you made the first record, did the label leave you alone? How hands-on were they? Or did they just like what you did and so they were willing to let you go and just record?
Well, they trusted us to a certain extent because we'd already had this kind of a mega explosion with Johnny, Are You Queer? It was a single that came out on Bomb first. So they did trust my producers to go in and without much supervision.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that was good. You know, there was technical difficulties in the middle of it. It took a lot longer than we thought. And so it became just a kind of tense towards the end there. Right. And the machines were doing odd things. You know, I think it was one of my favorite records. Sure.
It's a great one. Now, are you tired of talking about Johnny, Are You Queer? I would think that it could get exhausting if that's because everyone's going to ask you about that. You have to play it at every show. It's just kind of part of you. But are you, be honest, are you sick of talking about it?
Well, it depends on the kind of questions I'm asked.
Right.
Sometimes people ask me questions that I think about it in a totally new way. It's actually, there's a lot of different layers to that record and that time, mm-hmm. and what happened and the political, you know, ramifications of the song and what happened to me and my story. And so, you know, there's, well, when someone asked me, was Johnny Are You Queer controversial? to me, that's like astounding that someone wouldn't consider that, you know. But then, you know, then not everyone was around that time. Not everyone was listening to the radio. So, right. So I just go with it now. I don't even care anymore.
I kind of feel that it might be more controversial today if you released it. You know what I'm saying? Because queer means people embrace the word queer now. I'm the father of a gay college student, and it's a, you know, it's different now. And back then, sometimes that word could have been derogatory, but it wasn't. You know, but in the way that you meant it in the song, it was not derogatory.
No,
I just want to point that out.
Yeah. And and what was so interesting was somebody asked me on Sirius Radio. They said, well, it would have been so much easier to put it out now than back then. And I really agree with you.
Yeah.
I think that if that word hadn't been defanged, or whatever you want to call it, or
right.
made, you know, safe for people to use and not use it in a hateful way, and just to have it be a source of fun and humor and you know, with that kind of a message, I think if someone came up now with that word and had not been gone through the, you know, the trials of hell that
right.
I went through over it, I think there'd be some political correctness going on.
I believe so too.
I don't think someone would, you're the first person who's agreed with me on that too. I think it would just be big trouble with, you know, all kinds of people.
Yeah.
And So, yeah, that's a good, point.
I also, it makes me mad when people will refer to this as a novelty song. I think that, I feel like that's diminishing the pop rock credibility of mm-hmm. this fun song. I'm sure you might feel the same way. It's not a yeah. novelty song. It's not the streak. It's not something frivolous. It's it's more than that.
It was more than that. It was something I refer to as an atom bomb. It really had a huge reverberation, and there was some people who didn't have any idea there was controversy. And those are the people who loved the idea of that, that word being brought into, their vernacular. There was a comedy element that made that word okay. In the song, because the girl was so naive, she had no idea. The way it wasn't a novelty song was the way the world reacted to it. I mean, it was banned in Amsterdam. Novelty songs, bikinis,
right.
polka dot bikinis. It wasn't that. I was attacked by the religious right. The televangelical community said I was actually a man trying to, get people to be homosexuals. And they had me at half speed on the television. I saw it with my own eyes. And I always tell people I sounded just like Brian Wilson, like at half speed. And they're screaming and crying, I'm just... So that that's another sign that it's not a novelty sign. I was, banned by the Catholic Church, banned in Amsterdam, and even some of the gay community in on the East Coast had an issue with it. And I understand, I didn't at the time, but looking back, I do think it was right around when AIDS came out.
Yeah.
And there probably was some sensitivity regarding who is this girl, coming out. But the schizophrenic nature of it was that on the West Coast, it was a song for the masses to be cheering. It was embraced, and I had so many gay men come up and tell me over the years that was a song that made them know it was okay to be gay, and thanking me. So crying and thanking me and all these stories of the first time they heard the song. I mean, it really was, quite a voyage to go through that song.
Well, it's all worth it then when you have that faction of people that will come up to you and tell you how much it meant to them personally.
Yes,
it kind of wipes away any of the nonsense from the religious right or whatever else was happening. It only takes one or two people to make you feel better, for sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, the irony is, when we were shopping around trying to get a deal, IRS Records, they said, well, we want to sign her. This is when the IRS, that was like...
The Go-Go's and everything, yeah.
And they said, if she'll drop that song, we want to sign her.
That's shocking.
And my producer said, who wrote the Payne Brothers, they wrote the song. And they said, well, it's up to you, which I thought that was pretty big of them.
Yeah.
And I said, well, if I drop the song, then I'm really starting off kind of prostituting myself from the beginning,
you know.
And then I said, maybe I'll wait and prostitute myself later.
Yeah, you can't start your career as a dishonest artist. You can't do that. And Valley Girl had no problem putting it in the movie.
Yeah, that was amazing that they were that brave, because that there was corporate backlash at that point and to me. And so... I thought that was pretty brave of Martha Coolidge to insert that song. And at that point, the word was, a neutral word. And,
right.
and I have to say, when I see all the ways it's used now and in all kinds of ways, and these kids, they just don't have any idea, you know, I actually took a bullet for that song.
Right. Well, it's LGBTQ.
Yeah.
So there it is.
Yeah.
It's right there.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. So, anyway, so that, I mean, that's, I'm the Johnny, are you queer girl? I will always be that. So that's fine.
Well,
I'm
you're, okay with that. Well, that's our starting point, but then you're much more than that, Josie. First album. It's a great album. Does Prescott Niles, does he play on the first album?
No, I hadn't met Prescott at that point.
Okay. But he was in some of your touring bands.
Oh yeah. He was all over the second record.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. He's been on the show, and that's why I ask, because I love his playing and he's fun. So.
Oh, he's the best bass player. My gosh.
He's amazing. The Knack was on a break, so you could have him for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I borrowed him from the Knack.
So three songs on the Valley Girl soundtrack, Johnny, Are You Queer? He Could Be the One, and School's In. That's great.
Right.
And you were in the movie, you in the band.
I was in the movie and they'd asked for a song that I had written Systematic Way. And I went, oh no, I've learned since, but you know, oh no, A School Is In is perfect for Valley Girl. You know, don't use my song that I wrote, and I, you know, use this song. So that has always been a point of, you know.
Yes, because if you get a song that you wrote on a soundtrack, that's money.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know better now.
Yeah, I do.
So Elektra was okay with releasing Johnny, Are You Queer as a single also?
It's a mixed bag. You know, they did it first and then they got cold feet. They basically, pulled it from radio. It got okay, but by the time I got there, it had been okayed for AM radio.
Okay.
If there was a beep for the word queer.
Wow.
But it was going to be all over AM radio, and they pulled it. They decided not to go with it, and I think they regretted signing me and having anything to do with the song, because there was all this corporate, you know, reaction and whatnot.
All right. Well, let's move on from that. We got it all out of the way up top. Let's talk about the other albums and the other music. I'd like to talk about you. You were born in Texas. Are you from Dallas?
Yeah, I'm from Dallas. Yeah.
And when did you come to L.A.? What age?
I was like, you know, like 20 something, you know, just young.
And just you came here for music.
For music, yeah. Yeah, to be a songwriter.
And any musical people in your family?
None. So, nope. The guy I thought was my father was a ballet dancer. I grew up in a ballet studio, a lot of artists around me. So,
okay.
So there was that influence for sure.
So was your mom open to you pursuing music as a career?
Yeah, there was no problem with that. She thought it was cute, you know.
Yeah, because sometimes there is, though. You know what I mean? Like parents, no, I want you to be a doctor or a lawyer.
Yeah. And it's, no, yeah, that was fine. It was okay. She was happy I found something I loved. And
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah, I mean, look, if you don't have your supportive parents, it's tougher. So that's good that you had that support. Cotton is not your real last name, correct?
Well, no.
Josie Jones?
Yeah.
Why did you change it? I think Josie Jones sounds pretty cool, too.
I like that, too, and I almost used it. When I first met my producers, the Payne Brothers, and I said, and my mom had gotten married like 6 times. I had so many fathers and so many names. And they said, well, what name you want to use? And I said, well, I want to use the name I was born with, Josie Jones. I've never gotten to use it because she was just going through, you know, husbands. And so this, well, that would be nice, but we already are producing someone named John Jones.
Yeah. Okay.
And so you can't use your name. And so it was just, you know, going through the list of, you know, companies my, you know, family had and whatnot. And it was a combination of things that he came up with that one. I actually have a cousin whose name is Melissa Cotton Josie. So it's a family name.
All right. Well, that's good. Cool.
Yeah.
I was just curious. So when you get to L.A., what do you start doing first? How did you get into the business? Were there clubs that you could just go to and get time and perform?
Well, I was kind of more interested in being a songwriter. And so I had my tapes, I had made demo tapes, and was going around to record companies and making more demo tapes and writing. I really wasn't performing out here. But I ran into one of the Payne Brothers in a bank, and we became friends, and then found out that they had, you know, a studio, and they were songwriters, he and his brother. So I mean, mine was just basically that, you know, in running into someone at the Hollywood Sunset and Vine, you know, just ridiculous Hollywood story. But that was it, you know. I just, you know, was kicked out of all kinds of record companies.
That's such a Hollywood story. Just a random meeting at a bank. Like, you know, there is a bit of luck and coincidence in the entertainment business for sure.
Well, there better be. I mean, that's one of the elements that it's the one you can't really plan for. A little bit of, you know, synchronicity or whatever you want to call it.
Now, as far as your music goes, I don't like to pigeonhole music, but what would you call it? I mean, calling it girl pop kind of seems dismissive to me. So
you mean the first two records?
Yes.
I would say it's new wave pop.
All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're definitely in that realm with those two records. When you were touring back then, who were some of the bands that you were opening for?
We didn't do a whole lot of touring, but I did open up for ABC when I was in New York, and then I did a few, you know, like festivals where Missing Persons was playing in Berlin and those kind of bands. That's my and Sparks. I played a lot of shows with Sparks.
This all makes sense. And these are all good shows. That makes sense.
Yeah.
You just
and Stray Cats and Oingo Boingo. I also did some shows with them.
So perfect.
That was fun.
I believe some of the last shows that happened out here in L.A. You and Missing Persons performed together out here.
Yeah, we did. And the girl from Bow Wow Wow, if I could say it. And it was going to be Ladies from the 80s in San Francisco, which I was excited about. It was a real rock club and not a huge venue, which I like, you know, a few hundred people. But so there was all kinds of touring set up for this year. I'm not alone in that, but it was hard for all my musician friends, you know, to be, you know, grounded right as things are going.
Yeah,
you know,
we have to keep our fingers crossed for 2021 that you guys get to get back out there.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the second album, 1984, From the Hip.
Yeah.
Kicks off with a great song, Jimmy Loves Marianne. I love it so much.
Yeah.
Such a cool tune.
Jimmy's been down, he's been out in the rain, and knows we're there. Love will be good if it felt like it could, but it isn't like that. He don't make mistakes, and what he needs, he takes.
Were they still like pushing Josie Cotton music for the second album? Because this one really seems like it just, got lost.
It did get lost. I think they had, were having, issues. I don't know what happened, but the record, that song actually charted and did quite well, but they were on a firing spree, and they fired their CEO they fired my producers, and Roy Thomas Baker came in and finished the record, and he was also the CEO. It was, but he, I don't know. I just that was not, that wasn't my favorite experience in recording, things were just kind of, they were falling apart. I would say on the first record, things were, exploding, into this beautiful kind of dream. And then that was when the dream was kind of like fading away.
That's so sad. I mean, that's such an up and then down so quickly. And as an outsider, when I look back, 83, 84, that's when Madonna and Cyndi Lauper were breaking big. And I would think that Elektra Records would say, oh, well, we have that right here with Josie Cotton. She's our version of that. If I can, and again, I said, I didn't like to pigeonhole, and there I'm doing it, but you know what I mean? They could have, look, you were easy on the eyes and the music was great. I feel they dropped the ball, and I'm sure you feel that too, pushing you in a big way. It just doesn't make sense. Yeah, it does not make sense.
That's what I said. But, I left. I got out of there and then went on this whole other musical journey, of anything that didn't remind me of Josie Cotton.
just wanted to put that behind you. I want to mention, though, there's the song on From the Hip, that another song I like is Gina. And the guitar has a very Western country music feel to it, because that's kind of in your DNA too, from being from Dallas. Because a lot of the music does have like a country Western poppy fusion to it, which is cool.
Yeah, that was the Payne Brothers. They had that element of the Western guitar, which I always loved. That was, I'm still using that. That's something that's continued.
Yes, it has. And we'll talk about that. So in 1986, you do record another album though. Everything is Oh Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that wasn't released at the time.
Yeah. I was recording it. I'd already been dropped by Elektra. And, so I decided just to, but I had all these songs and we were, wanting to go ahead. So we just recorded a record. And then, they started hearing that I was recording, or my old management and various people, in the industry. And that kind of terrified me a bit. It was like, anytime I thought of the music business, it was like, someone was like, stepping on my solar plexus or something. It was like, I really would just feel sick to my stomach. I don't know. I mean, this was my experience. I'm sorry to be dragging you.
No,
down.
No, it's good. It's good because I think it's good to hear these stories because you achieve your goal of becoming a recording artist. You get signed by a major label. You get two albums out and then you're dropped. And now you're recording just because that's what you do. Right. And people hear that you're recording and that starts to worry you. And now you're feeling anxious about doing what your life's work, your love.
Yeah.
And that's a terrible feeling.
Well, just to be on a label and not have anybody in your corner. 'Cause I had always had a production team in my band and it was just terrifying to me. And it didn't sound fun or something that would bring me, the thing that was so shocking to me was how really they really didn't know what they were doing a lot of the times. And I always kept saying, can't Coca-Cola manage me? Because they seem to get, they know how to keep the drinks in the stores. And they like, why is this so hard with these people? They're supposed to be professionals. I just never understood, how that worked. But it just seemed the competence level was not as high as you would think.
Just think of all the great artists that are out there that never even were able to get to the level that you did
because they didn't
have, the correct backing and the correct management and the correct people in their corner. I mean, it's really, it's sad. It's unbelievable.
It's sad. And I, some of the most talented people I ever met never got a record deal, but there's always some weird like element. There's maybe an odd manager or the person had some personality quirk. There's always some thing odd, but the stuff that people never heard, I mean, it's remarkable. The talent that got wasted, from that time.
It also works the opposite way. A mediocre artist can have amazing backing and be a superstar. And you're just like, well, how did that happen?
Yeah. I could never put that together. I was confused a lot. I was like,
you're confused and you were in it and you're confused. So imagine how an outsider like me looks upon your career and feels. So great songs on Everything Is Oh Yeah. You finally got to release it in 2019. So we can finally hear it. The title track is amazing. I love the song Boulevard. That might be my favorite.
Oh, thank you. I thought all these tapes were lost. And so when we found them in just bizarre places, a garage and rafters and, I'd saved them from a fire and all kinds of like stories connected to those 2-inch gigantic master tapes they don't even make anymore. But and we were listening to it. It still made me feel weird to hear that record. It reminded me it was just some kind of DNA reaction. And I heard that song Boulevard. I was sitting there and going, oh wow, that made me emotional. That was that was such a heartfelt song for me. So that was like wow. And then when I heard the duet when Brian Setzer did The Night Before. And, and that was like, wow, people need to hear this. This is really good.
That's a cover of the Beatles song.
Yeah.
We said our goodbyes tonight.
which is, it sounds like a terrible idea, but I think it turned out really, really good.
Well, that's the thing about music. You said you listen to this and it still kind of makes you feel, but, that's the beauty of music. It can either take you back to a great time in your life, or it can take you back to a miserable time. And no matter how many times you listen to that song, it's going to make you feel that way.
Absolutely.
But I'm glad that album finally got released.
Thank you.
So now there's a lot of time now between, you know, From the Hip and until you release new music. Mm-hmm. What does Josie Cotton do during that period? I mean, to keep did you earn enough money from the touring and the first two records to support yourself, or what did you have to do?
Well, I had a recording studio, okay. And with my boyfriend at the time was Geza X, and we had a recording studio, and he was a wonderful producer, and I continued to record,
right.
Because I had a studio in my house, and so I just kept writing and it just kind of kept going like that. And then there were people come in and, we recorded all kinds of, interesting artists, and I liked being around it.
Right.
And that was it. But I'm very slow in my recording process. And, so it's good. And I still have a studio, out here. So I'm able to record, which is fantastic, because I'm really extremely slow in the studio.
But do you when you are in there, do you love it?
I love it. I'm a studio rat. I'm just I like to hear the drums made. I like every step of it. I like completely sitting right there in every step of it, the mixing, the every moment of it. I'm there, whether Paul wants me to or not. I'm right there.
So I guess the next recorded music then we hear from you isn't till 1993, if I'm correct. Frightened by Nightingales.
Right.
Which was finally available digitally just this past year, 2020.
Right. But that was about as far away from Josie Cotton as I could get.
Absolutely. When I listened to that, because I just listened to that recently for the first time. And I liked it. My favorite song, I think, is In the World Tonight. I think that's a killer. It's really nice, but it is.
I really like it too.
You did. I don't want to say abandoned the sound, but it's much different from the first two records. But as an artist, that's what you want. You want to grow. You don't want to do the same thing your whole entire life.
Well, that was what was frustrating to be me. My musical tastes were vast, and just to be doing 80s music for all this time, and some people never stop doing 80s music. Right. I would have lost my mind. They would have had to put me in an institution so long ago, like screaming. So I said, well, I'm free. I have a studio. I can experiment. That record was like as a singer, it was such a challenging record to record. It was a totally different part of my voice. And I really, I was free to do it because there weren't really very many, not much of it had I written. And it was more about me really believing in the producer and writer, Bill Ray. He was such an incredible talent. And I thought, well, I don't think I can do this for myself yet, but I can do this for him.
Yeah.
And I'll put my name on it and it'll help him. I didn't think of it as like a continuation of my career or anything. I just wanted to do music and I didn't want to quite be Josie Cotton. And so I misspelled my name and it's ridiculous, as if someone wouldn't notice. But yeah, so that was that. But I had so much fun doing that record. So that was absolute freedom, you know.
You probably had more fun doing that record than you did the first two records.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so then no new music for 13 years, 2006. And then
for the public,
you're still doing stuff, but we're not hearing it.
But right.
This movie disaster music, all these songs are written by you.
Yeah.
And that's the thing
actually the song, the record I did next after Frightened by Nightingales was the Invasion of the B-Girls. But I didn't put that out for a long time.
Yes.
But the next one that came out, you're right, it was Movie Disaster Music. Yeah.
So I want to give you credit for writing all these songs too, because again, the sexism in the music business, I think a lot of times when there's a female singer, everyone thinks that someone else is writing those songs and you're just choosing songs. I don't know if you feel that way, but but this album, this is all Josie Cotton, and there's definitely a theme to this album. How would you describe it?
Oh, there is. I don't know what that is. I think it's kind of, it's kind of dark, and it's a lot of the musicians were really messed up humans. I don't know. It's a journey. I don't know. What do you call it? What is it?
I don't know, but I can tell you that the song "Beautiful but Deadly," it reminds me of like a James Bond theme song.
Just another sad cliche you just as soon forget, and it's more than you can take upon your broken head. Everything was too far gone. Something deep inside was eating you. Something was telling you run, beautiful but deadly, beautiful but deadly, just a tired masquerade.
Well, you know, did you read that in my?
I did not.
Because that was at a time when it almost was used in the James as a James
really?
Bond song.
Oh,
yeah, it
that
came would've... so close. It was like we were writing up the papers, and then the guy from I can't remember. There's a really famous musician who came in, and he decided to do it. And then they said, "Well, sorry, we can't use your song." But how perfect would that have been?
That would have been perfect. And I swear to God that I did not read this anywhere. I'm a big James Bond fan. And anytime I hear songs that remind me of a James Bond theme, I'm like, oh, that just grabs me. So Beautiful but Deadly. It's awesome. It's awesome.
I love that. I borrowed that title from a newscast. There was some crazy, it was a woman, she was a criminal. She was a thief. She robbed banks. She was in jail. She escaped. I can't remember her name, but they were doing this newscast. And they said, "The Beautiful but Deadly, Bambi, blah, blah, blah." And I went, "Beautiful but Deadly."
Perfect.
Oh my God. That's just, yep. I'm taking that one.
Take it.
So good.
So now you're telling me that the album that came out in 2007, Invasion of the B-Girls, that was actually recorded before movie Disaster Music.
Yeah.
Okay. Now this is a really cool album also. This might be my favorite of your albums.
I love this album. It's
so awesome. It's got this 60s vibe. And are these songs, they're from B movies, right?
Right.
So
yes.
These are songs that are in, I mean, some people love B movies and some people think B movies are bad. So let's say these are, I think I did read this one. These are like great songs from bad movies. Is that a way to describe it?
Great in quotation marks. Yeah. And also, good in quotation marks. Yeah. What is bad and what is good?
Exactly.
I've always loved science fiction and exploitation movies, and which sounds much worse than it is. But and then I fell in love later in life with Russ Meyer, and you can safely call those exploitation.
Yes,
movies.
For sure.
But I, you know, since I was a little girl, that was my escape, and I was just was watching one of these movies. Where Mothra and Godzilla are saving the world, and they're the twins in the flower.
Yes, you know? I know that movie well.
And it was this most beautiful song. And I just remember sitting there and realizing that my most favorite thing in the world wasn't something was incredibly beautiful, you know, and sad and hilariously funny all at the same time. And I was like, what is that emotion? Is there a name for that? Because that is the most incredible thing. It was so absurd and so sad and so beautiful. And I thought, I've got to do a record of all B movie theme songs, because that's my favorite thing in the world, that feeling. And so I ended up doing that song, and I in Japanese I did it phonetically, and
Shiawase o yobi ni ko natsukashi shimae.
When we re-released it last year, my friend in Tokyo, he's a DJ, and he says, your diction is perfect. How did you learn your Japanese diction? I was reading it from a piece of paper, like, La Nutachi Kamacha. I had no idea, but the translation was so beautiful. And so that was the singular most fun I've ever had in a studio. It was so ridiculously fun.
And from this story, what I'm gathering is Josie Cotton wants to experience all the emotions all at one time. That's what
yes.
you like.
Yes.
Well, there are some there's some great songs on here. Get Off the Road.
We are the hell gets nobody likes. 9 liters on motel bikes. We on this road, so you better get lost. When you hear the road, put on exhaust. For the offer you find that you have.
Yeah.
Girling.
Have you seen the movies?
I have not seen these movies. These movies are not in my wheelhouse of what I enjoy. But
Russ Meyer? You don't know
Russ
Meyer?
I know who Russ Meyer is. He always wants the girls with the big...
No, that was later. This was
these are earlier?
Yes.
What one can you recommend
Faster
to me?
Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill.
That's the one you would recommend as a starting point.
And Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. Those two movies are epic.
These are the films that Tarantino likes also.
Probably.
Yeah.
He should. But the boob movies came later.
Okay. That's what I always think. I always, when I hear Russ Meyer, I think of the boob movies.
Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill is actually in the Museum of Modern Art. It is so well filmed, and it is so ahead of its time, and the music is so incredible in both of those movies.
Well, I'm going to see now. I'm going to watch that movie. I'm going to start there. And who killed Teddy Bear? I love that song.
One word, his eyes. Now they run cold. That's why my cries can't be controlled. He wasn't just another toy you love and then destroy. Tell me who killed Teddy Bear? Doesn't anybody care that I miss him?
These songs are really cool, and it is good that you recorded these and get them out there so that people who aren't familiar with these films can at least use the music as a jumping off point.
Well, yeah.
So bravo.
It had to be like a really kind of crazy movie. And then also had to have a song that I thought was really, would be fun to sing.
Right.
You know, so I had to watch so many movies. I went on a movie junket for like a long time, and I had the longest late charges in this one place that ever had. So
some people listening won't even know what that means. A late charge on a video.
Yeah. At a video store, Mondo Video. That was.
Oh, I remember that store. I remember that. So
what's a really horrible movie? Can you tell me a really horrible movie that has a great song? And you go, oh, well, try this one. You know, She Devil's on Wheels. It's a girl biker movie.
When I first moved out here, I used to see Johnny Ramone at a lot of those places renting all the movies. Mm-hmm. And that was a big thrill for me to see Johnny Ramone rent a movie. What 2010, Pussycat Babylon. Mm-hmm. Tell me about Pussycat Babylon, because that's the one that I don't own and that I don't know anything about.
Oh, you haven't heard that one?
I have not heard that one.
Well, that's our next re-release. That was where I went electronica.
Okay.
And that one was a lot of people, it's their favorite record I ever did. I wrote all the songs on this one too. And I wish more people had heard that, but I had a few of the songs. They were dance remixes that got a huge amount of action in Europe and mm-hmm. whatnot. And Tiesto did one of them, that famous, a huge DJ in Europe. So he got a number 12 on the Billboard dance chart.
That's great.
About 10 years. So that was nice.
And that one's coming out next.
Yeah. There's a video for that record also. That's for See the New Hong Kong is probably my favorite song on that record.
I wake up with the TV on, fly away, see the new Hong Kong, Asian girls just slightly out of focus. I don't notice that I notice there's a movie in my head, projecting from my bed, drowning out the splashing sounds of summer, and I lost the seventh wonder. The only
And that's on YouTube. Can we see that on YouTube?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right, cool.
Hong Kong.
I'll try to pull a clip from that and insert it into this episode before it drops.
Nice.
2019, Every Day Like Christmas.
Lifting us
You finally write a Christmas song. Is that something that you had wanted to do for a long time?
Nope.
No. So how does that happen?
Well, I had a song that I wrote quite a while back, and my publisher called me and she said, I have a Christmas emergency. Whatever. I never heard of that before,
no.
But apparently it's a thing she had anyway. She said, we need a Christmas song. And I'd always toyed around with changing the lyrics in that particular song. Would have been a pretty Christmas song, I thought. Just, you know, not that I wanted to, but, you know, was dying to do it. But when I put to the task, I realized that I should have wanted to, because it was really lovely to be able to express something that wasn't corny, and that wasn't too many cliches,
right?
And that was heartfelt. And I think at a time the world could use a message like that. It's, you know,
it's a good one. You nailed it. You did a good job. It's hard to do an original Christmas song, but you did it.
It
really is. All right. So 2020, you release a single, Ukrainian Cowboy, backed with Cold War Spy.
Something's coming, but I don't know what. Look out the window, someone's looking up. Same face from the restaurant.
Yes.
So that's the newest of the new, right? That's the newest music that people can go and download and purchase.
Did you see that video, the Ukrainian Cowboy?
I don't think I did see the video for Ukrainian Cowboy. Am I disappointing you every time you ask me something? I go, no, I didn't see it. I'll go see it, though. I will go watch it now, but I did not know.
Cowboy is like, it's pretty funny. I like humor in everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's nothing better than laughing.
Well, you know, maybe one other thing.
Okay. We know what it is. If I were to ask you, who are some of your musical influences? Like when you were a kid growing up or younger, who did you look to? What vocalist did you like, and male and female, whoever it is?
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely influenced by various female singers and songwriters. I mean, there's so many. I'm a child of the British invasion, so that was always, songwriting wise, but in terms of just out and out singing, Dionne Warwick, Tammy Wynette, Lulu, that type of, did I say Dusty Springfield already?
No, you did not. But all of these make sense.
Yeah.
From what we know
Wanda
about.
Wanda Jackson, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Look, those all make sense. None of those surprise me when I think of the career that you have had. Those are right on point.
Very good, then. I'm doing all right.
I just want to say, Josie, you have been delightful to chat with today. And I thank you so much for giving me this time. This was fantastic.
Well, thank you. This was fun.
Now, I always ask, I always do a playout song at the end of the episode. So let's do some promoting first. First of all, josiecotton.com is where we can find everything about you, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And and you have a Twitter account, but it doesn't seem like you're active on Twitter at all.
No, you know, people, I can't make it go away. Someone said, about 10 years ago, well, you got to open a Twitter account. And I was on there one time and I didn't like it. And then I tried to get off of there and they won't let me cancel it. It's just why.
So it's just there.
And it's just there, and they will not remove it. But I am pretty active on Instagram and Josie Cotton Official and Facebook. I'm reachable.
Cool, you know? Cool.
And I'm working on a new record right now. I just had Clem Burt play drums on a couple of songs for this new record. And so that's fun.
So we can look for that this year or 2022?
It's in the spring. We're over halfway through with that. So,
all right. So my final question is, we always end the episode with a play out song. So if you could choose one of your songs, I know that's difficult because people always say all their songs are their babies. What song would you like me to play out with today?
I would say, Ukrainian Cowboy is pretty current enough from last year. And it's a really sad song, but it's also really funny. It's like the musically, there's just, it has all that element in it.
Excellent.
And we did the video like a B movie, like a kind of Stalin meets Tammy Wynette in the desert kind of a thing. But
well that sounds eclectic to say the least. Josie Cotton, thank you again for being on the show. You can follow us at Rock Solid Show on Twitter, and you can go to rocksolidpodcast.com for all the episodes and everything about the show. And now I would like everyone to enjoy the song by Josie Cotton. Here is Ukrainian Cowboy. I like to be able to see the person's face I'm talking to because so I know if my line of questioning is pleasing them or not pleasing them too. And that's, you can really get that from looking at each other.
Right,
so
all the nuances and exactly. You're very good to look at yourself.
So. Oh, well, thank you so much.